In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back. My name is Chris.
I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Streaming Things, the only podcast we're pretty sure that brings you the best, the brightest, the strangest, the sexiest TV shows and film properties to stream right from your home.
In an ocean of streaming networks vying for your attention, we are your lighthouse, your beacons of broadcast,
your curators of content.
Yes!
We crushed that one.
It's nailed it.
No rehearsal whatsoever.
Out of mini one. That was a throwback to the Stranger Things show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was one of the episode titles.
Out of many one.
Full disclosure, we just did a fire-ass 10-minute intro.
10 minutes.
And I was crushing it. I was emoting. There was so much gravitas and pathos to everything I specifically said. And we weren't recording. So I'm just going to have to get you guys to trust me on that one.
Well, perhaps there's a multiverse out there somewhere where we did record that original.
This is truly the darkest timeline.
I was going to make that same joke about this is the fucked up one where Steve, we have the bad Steve. And I'm sad
about that. Just because I have a mustache does not mean I'm evil, guys. Okay.
If there is a better Steve in another universe, I can't imagine that.
Steve's angry in French now. He's been that way the whole time.
But across all multiverses, time streams, we do have a special guest with us.
We do. And his name is Sean. Hi, Sean.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to the real show where it's being recorded. Sean is a great friend of the show. And as we said before, but you did not hear, we are excited this evening, waiting with bated breath, mere hours from witnessing the glory that is Everything Everywhere all at once, which ironically opened in limited release.
Not everywhere, ago. Not all at once.
What the fuck? It was right there in the title.
It's had the most staggered film release in some time.
It's been very frustrating. For the past month, we've been reading about how awesome this movie is and constantly refreshing AMC, trying to find tickets. We finally got them. We actually bought tickets to go up to Westchester. We were just like, okay, it's a plane there. Let's fucking go. And then Chris was like, we're going to find out. Maybe they're going to come here. I don't know why it talks like that, but that's how we...
Well, you know, I'm going to go look
around. We both talk like an out-of-breath Boomhauer when we're anxious. If you know this.
Every time.
But it turned out that it was coming to us eventually. So it's Everything Everywhere all at once eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a caveat there. Yeah. And but we've been hearing nothing but just enormous gushing of praise for this film from all corners of the film globe, the film loving globe. Everything from a hyperbolic favorite movie of all time to probably accurate best movie of the year guaranteed and everything in between. But no negative praise that I've seen whatsoever. No one would dare, at least.
Oh, that will change probably starting today.
Certainly. Certainly. And of course, this is a film from the Daniels. You probably know them from a 2016 film called Swiss Army Man, starring Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano. One of Andy's favorite movies.
It is.
Watched it many, many times. I think I've seen it twice.
It's in my top 10 of all time. I fucking love that movie.
I didn't know how to take it. You know, I wasn't the A24 aficionado that I am today. At the time, I was like, he's using Harry Potter's boner as a compass. I think I like this. But it also seems like fan fiction that I would write. So I'm confused.
This is the dark timeline where Harry dies and we see what happens to his body.
Yeah.
And I'm here for
that. That corpse would have power.
And just regular old Paul Dano finds Harry Potter and it's like, oh, I need this.
And his elder one.
Yeah. So we know from that film that the Daniels are just wildly inventive. And apparently this film is not a departure from that. Sean, have you seen Swiss Army Man?
I have not, but dude, it sounds kind of right up my alley.
It's he uses Daniel Radcliffe's corpse as a gun. He showers with him.
One could say he uses him as a Swiss Army
man. Yeah, I was going to say the Swiss Army is starting to make more sense.
Name some of the corpse tools, perhaps.
Yeah, that's true.
If Sean wasn't already drawn into its majesty.
Does he use him as like a Ski-Doo? For a hot portion
of
the movie?
He's a farting corpse, and he can ride him like a Ski-Doo.
Yeah, so in the ocean, he travels upon him with his farts.
It's wonderful. And it has the greatest line in cinematic history.
Which is?
If you don't know Jurassic Park, you don't know shit.
That's true. That is the mantra that Steve has lived his whole life by.
Yep, it's right there on a quilt hanging on my wall. I pointed to nothing, and then Sean looked like, really?
We all looked.
It's like, oh, it is. Wow.
Yeah, because it's audio, man. We got them. They don't know.
They don't fucking know my house. They don't know that I live in a 16-story mansion with Playboy models everywhere. That's right. Playboy models.
So wait, I can't remember. Is the whole bit where we had to hold hands and we actually did it and we prayed for the film and stuff or whatever we were doing, that was on the unrecorded
version? That was the unrecorded. Yeah. Do you want to say another prayer again?
No.
Because again, we're going to see this movie and it will surely, if yeah, the
Steve,
reviews are...
Steve, guide us in. And for some reason, okay, we're actually holding hands every time we do this. All right, you guys can't
see. We're holding hands. We formed a prayer circle. Listener at home, I want you to reach out. Physically reach out with your hand as if you're trying to touch us.
Unless just you're driving.
Ether, you know, do it while you're driving too, because this is important.
Keep your hands at 10 and 2.
Keep one hand at 10 and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. The other hand stretched out as if to touch us, because right now we are just going to reflect upon how, as of this moment, before we go see Everything Everywhere All at Once, the world as it is now, for it will never be the same again in just a few short hours. Mm. In this name we pray. Thank you, Daniels.
Thank you, Daniels.
Thank you, Cake.
Also, I just want to say that streaming things is not responsible for any car accidents that may incur.
So check this, guys. What if it sucks?
That is a distinct possibility.
There is a universe.
Yes.
In which that is the case. But I don't think it is this one. I highly doubt it, at least. You know, you get to a place in life where you find your like-minded critics, and they hardly ever steer you wrong, but it's pretty much been ubiquitously loved, unanimous support for this movie. So much so that, as I said before, the Daniels have humbly denied it, saying, hey, lower your expectations. I think you'll have more enjoyment. I've never imagined that being something I would have to deal with. And to this day, yeah, I don't know if it ever will be.
I don't think I've ever heard of a director coming out saying, hey guys, my movie really isn't that good.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people are saying it's not.
Chill out.
Thank you, but I know what it is.
I see that though. I have the kind of anxiety where I could see like the first day or two of all these critics, like this is the greatest movie ever made, that feeling really good. But knowing that it's a limited release and like, your average Joe is about to see it coming, just feeling like, oh no.
The Last Jedi was rocking like a 97 before it actually went out. So critics were like, you guys, this is the best fucking Star Wars ever. And Rian Johns is like, I did it. And then we found out how the rest of the world was going to react.
Yeah, the audience score started checking in like, hi, Neckbeard's here.
Excuse me.
Neckbeard here.
The casual moviegoer is going to be like, there's not even a post-credit scene. They're like, what the fuck?
I mean, it's all right, but it's no Morbius.
I'll wait 3 weeks for the real multiverse.
That's going to be dope too, though.
Apparently there are people that are like, and I hope to God it's satire, but there's like Letterboxd reviews for Everything Everywhere All at Once claiming that the Daniels have ripped off the concept of the multiverse from MCU, and that they're even stealing actors from the MCU and they're ripping off of the theoretical multiverse. It's wild. That's the world we live in.
Hopefully that is satire. What actors are Marvel actors?
I think Michelle Yeoh is in one of, like, either Shang-Chi or Eternals, one of the new ones, I thought. That's what they claimed. So maybe they're...
I don't remember. And I liked both of those movies more than
about Asian people.
Your average Joe. No, I mean, I'm almost certain Michelle Yeoh would be. She's such a phenom. Such a phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally an hour and a half from... witnessing the splendor. And so we hope that you stay with us on this journey. We wanted to touch base on our way in. And then on our way out, obviously, we're going to give you our full unabashed review.
Can I just say what I'm most excited about?
I mean, you're on the show. I can't stop you.
The thing that you have
a microphone.
The thing that gets me most excited about it is just the appearance of, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Kei Hu-Kwan. Hu-Kwan, do you know who that is?
No.
It's the guy who played Short Round.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the buzz
in the Goonies, and like, this is his return to acting because he hasn't really been acting in some time. From like, yeah, his IMDb credits goes from a movie called Second Time in 2002 to something last year called Finding, I don't know, but hold on,
Nemo,
Finding Ohana, but I
close.
Don't, but that, but I don't think he starred in that. I think he just cameoed. But like, this is his first like real like I coming out cameoed. Party. Did you?
That's naughty.
My dude, those are leather seats you're sitting on, sir.
Did we talk about Short Round when we did our Goonies Patreon episode and like,
well, Data,
how he had quit acting?
I don't know if we mentioned about how he quit acting, but we talked about how like we love him so much in those movies. He brings such heart and he's such an enjoyable part of those movies. Stereotypes be damned. But you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, 80s. Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, they're still persisting. And I think that's what, and I can't speak on that. I mean, you have four mostly straight white dudes here. But I think that a lot of what's so special about this movie specifically, but really the last couple years of films with actors like Steven Yeun, you know, and Parasite winning Best Picture, you know, there's so many so much of the Asian culture being better represented slowly, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, after the COVID debacle, you've got all this anti-Asian horrible racism permeating, you know, at least America. And so it's nice to see. I think that was what was so heartbreaking about Michelle Yeoh's interview, which I think was not recorded as well when we were talking about that. But
you were correct, sir.
You know, she did an interview with GQ that Andy and I watched today. And, you know, we were both teary-eyed watching it because she was talking about how special of a project this is and how she's very choosy with her scripts. And it has to be something really special that the director believes in. But I think I've seen critics like Dave Chen and Walter Chaul talk about how special this is for the Asian community specifically. And so I'm really excited for that. I'm just, all in all, I'm ready to have my mind blown wide open, to laugh, to cry, and just be entertained. And so we will see if my prediction is true, but I expect all those things will happen. So look forward to that. You can email the show. Let's get this out of the way before we go see this movie at streamingthingspod@gmail.com. That is streamingthingspod@gmail.com. Please consider, if you can, financially supporting the show at patreon.com/streamingthings. You can subscribe to the show at a variety of tiers and get a variety of awards. Not awards. I won't award you anything. Rewards is the word I was looking for. We could give you an award, maybe get a new tier and just send out one of Steve's Emmys.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
$100 a month tier, borrow Steve's Emmys for a year at a time.
Yeah, just take photos with it.
Send it back.
This is Steve's Emmy at the beach. This is Steve's Emmy in a toilet.
Those are things we could do. Thank you to our current patrons.
Thank you, Uncle Phil. Hello, I'm Pippin the dog.
Hello, Pip.
Hello. I would rub my tummy, please, while I read these. Thank you. Thank you, Carmelita. Thank you, Carrie. Oh, thank you, Enza. Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Cake.
Thank you, Katie, so much. Thank you, Daniel. Hopefully they will see your movie and like it. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Elo, Kyle, and Toma. I hope you all come and rub my belly. This is Pippin the dog. Goodbye.
Thank you, Pippin the dog, Steve's dog, everybody.
You're welcome.
For contributing to the show. We could not reach Dolly Parton or Matthew Modine or Bernie Sanders this evening.
Yeah, Matthew Modine's been like MIA for a while.
He has, but he'll be returning soon. I have a theory.
Yeah.
It's one theory that I have, that by May 27th, he will return to the Streaming Things show. And we mentioned it last time. If you missed that episode, he will for certain be returning soon. The month of May, other than Doctor Strange and Top Gun, will mostly be recaps and republishings of Stranger Things content. from streaming things past, anticipating the May 27th debut of Stranger Things season 4.
Hell yeah.
Debussy.
Yeah, we're going to Debussy.
Debussy. <that's-
laughs> You'll get it, Andy. It has to sound like the other word or it's not funny.
I don't know. It worked out in the end.
Is that how you say it?
Debussy.
Give me some of that pussy.
Ew. I don't like that image.
Oh, man.
Gross. That's why this show is rated E for everyone.
Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
All at once.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
Brought it back in with a title. We do have time before we head to the theater. Is that how you say theater nowadays? Theater?
Teat.
That's how Timothée Chalamet says it.
He does.
I'm almost certain. But we do have time for the Crossing Streams segment. Let's knock that out. Crossing Streams is the segment where each week we talk about the things we've been streaming since last we met.
What a novel concept for a show called Streaming Things.
Andy?
We're thinkers.
You got anything you've been streaming you want to lay on our listeners?
Couple of things, you guys. I have started the rewatch. I am prepping myself for Streaming Things 4. And so I have begun my watch, much like the Night's Watch from Game of Thrones. And guys, I don't know if you knew this, but the show's pretty good.
Stranger Things is good, Andy said. He said it holds
pretty
up.
Pretty good.
You've heard it here third.
It holds up. And I'm excited.
This will be your fifth watch, right?
Of season one, yes.
Right.
I think I watched season two twice and season three once. So I got some rewatching to do to permeate myself back in the culture. I'm watching and I'm like, somebody can get it, but I can't remember who can get it.
Mr. Clark.
Mr. Clark can get it.
How could you forget about Mr. Clark and his perchance to get Debussy?
Debussy. That's right. I actually have already rewatched all of season one and I am partway into season two. So that's been wonderful. But spending a lot of time dealing with some display issues on my big TV. I'm not going to go hard on it again because I already talked about it. Mm-hmm. But I used this opportunity to work on the display while watching Stranger Things because there is an awful lot of dark scenery. And so like the display flashing issues I was dealing with were exacerbated in watching that show. But I'm happy to report that I've got it mostly taken care of.
Tune in next week for how Andy's TV's doing.
Will the blacks be blacker? The whites whiter? Tune in to find out.
So obviously I don't need to harp on about my love for Stranger Things. It's wonderful and I'm excited to be getting back into that world and I'm excited to see where it's going to go. I'm actually really excited to get into season two because I don't remember shit. So that has been really interesting to jump back in. I was like, oh my God, Eleven's at the cabin already. Like forgot all of that shit.
Skip episode 7.
Yeah. That's okay. We don't talk about that.
The Empire Strikes Back is Streaming Things or Stranger Things.
I've been
episode 7. Is that that's the one with the
that's
the
with
other
all
kids
the like
in
siblings
Chicago,
that
right?
try to like make their little the Stranger Things cinematic universe, and it's like everyone just like nah.
I'm 8. It's like all right, 8.
I remember we called that episode The Empire Strikes Back goes to Stranger Things because it was very like. The one girl was definitely like the Yoda.
It was so they actually start off the season introducing these characters. It's like, ooh, where are they going to be? And then like you find out later, like, oh my God, I wish they hadn't done that. But that's okay.
I can't wait for them to come back.
Yeah, you think? I'm hoping to God that they.
I want them to come back.
Otherwise, it's worse.
What? It's worse. It's like, why the fuck did we go through that for no reason?
That's a fair point. So I've been watching some other things too. I said a few episodes back that I was going to start watching Upload, the Amazon original that was created by the people that brought you The Office and Parks and Rec and many other things.
Greg Daniels.
I wanted to say that, but in my head, I was like. Is it Daniels? Because I'm just inundated with Daniel right now.
Yeah, there's so been a lot of Daniels mentioned, but I'm 99%.
So anyway, that's why I just went with The Office Guy. I hope you wouldn't call me out on it, but you did, and that's fine. You
can't just say The Office Guy.
It is Greg Daniels.
Yes! Fuck it. Yes!
Sorry. It's really good. Dude, honestly, so I love the hell out of that show like 3 years ago or whenever it was that it debuted. It's been a hot minute.
And you're a huge fan of The Office.
Yes, absolutely. Just general, that style of humor, and I love sci-fi, fun, lovey sci-fi stuff, and that's exactly what... Upload is this first episode that I watched is really good and it dude stylistically and like tonally It's as if they never stopped. And that was really cool. Like, it felt like they did not miss a step, even though it had been a hot minute. The problem is that it's been so fucking long that I don't really remember what happened.
And yeah, there it's been like 2 years, right?
There's a season one recap. And even though they did that, I'm still like, who are these people though? And so like, I watched this first episode and I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I can continue without going back and rewatching season one. And that's a bit of a commitment right now because I got other things I'm streaming. One of those other things being, and this is fucking dope and you guys are going to love it, on Apple TV Plus, there's a new show that just came out called Slow Horses. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard of
it.
No.
It is
I thought you were going to say Pachinko.
It's a semi-serious spy thriller. So it is basically the has-beens of MI6 or MI5 or whatever the British Secret Service is called. It stars Gary Oldman as like the curmudgeon has-been. I'm the one that has to deal with the rejects guy. So it's essentially about spies that didn't quite make the cut, but they didn't get fired. And so they get sent basically to like the, oh, you guys don't do shit. Club within the British Secret Service, and Gary Oldman is the leader of them, and he basically just forces them to do shitty things all the time. It's like, you go sift through this guy's fucking garbage, and it's like, why? Because I don't like you. That's why. Go do it.
I didn't know my childhood club was part of the Secret Service. That's right? Pretty crazy.
But so essentially, these wannabe spy people they uncover a like right-wing conspiracy that's happening in Britain. It's really, 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 really well done. And I'm only the one episode in, but I absolutely, absolutely love it. Like, it is really, really, really well done. Think like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy made into a like long series. It's just fucking awesome.
Interesting. I will check that out.
And then me and my girlfriend watched Forrest Gump the other night, and I actually have not watched that since I was like 19. It had been a hot fucking minute, and that movie also holds up. I'm pleased to report.
It's a great movie.
I'd be interested to see a sequel and like have him be part of historical events now, and be like, he's just like kind of mumbling around at the January 6th insurrection, and being like, I wonder what's going on again.
So did you like? Are you familiar that there was a sequel to the book?
No,
but the guy that wrote the book was like so pissed off about the movie and money and stuff that he like intentionally wrote the book like so outlandish and like bad that they wouldn't make a second Forrest Gump movie.
Wow. Self-sabotage.
Yeah, I was hearing about that.
They can make a sequel to the movie. They can ignore the book.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is what the guy did when he wrote Forrest Gump 2, is like F you, Paramount or whatever.
I think I recall hearing that in that Movies That Made Us show that the book was really not.
That's probably where I heard it.
Yeah, it was not selling well, right? It was like a book that was sitting on the desk of somebody somewhere and they just happened to pick it up. And now it's the legendary movie. That movie gets shit on a lot nowadays. It's one of those like hipster. You thought this movie was cool, but it's not.
Here's why it's not cool.
Right. And it's like, no, I really like pretty cool. Shawshank and Forrest Gump are great movies. I disagree. How could you not like it? You're a goddamn genius, Gump. You know,
I agree with Andy. I would love to see a modern day Forrest Gump where he's like, I may not be a smart man, but I sure do want to know what Pizzagate is. I'm here for the pizza, Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, and he would say things like, I bought this Bitcoin in 2010. Thank God, worry about money no more.
I wanted to buy a bunch of those dog coins, and apparently it's worth a lot of money.
Jenny retweeted me.
So that's on Amazon Prime right now. I think it's also available on Paramount Plus if you have that.
Thank you.
But my big recommendation right now is to go watch Slow Horses on Apple TV
Plus. Apple TV Plus, killing it, leading the game.
Absolutely crushing it. Pluse edited it again.
And in an era of like all these shows that I used to love that I find impossible to get back into post-COVID, I'm glad there's all these other shows to, you know, like Ozark and Upload, unfortunately, so far has fallen in that category. I'm like, I remember that I loved this, but I have no more fucks to give.
I have no memory of this place.
It has been so many years.
It is straight up Gandalf effect. It's bizarre.
Like, yeah.
I'm not the same person that I was.
Yeah. I tried to get back into the Ozark mentality, and I love all those people, but I watched like 4 episodes of season 4 and fucking shit, bitch, Marty, dick suck, Marty. And I just was like,
Marty
off pause or whatever, pause, whatever I did, I didn't come back. anywho, that's a quote from season 2, episode 4.
That's a quote, man.
Verbatim.
Sean, have you been streaming anything you want to bring to our attention? Or?
Oh, I've been streaming a few things of late. I watched The Adam Project. It's like really good. I love, one, Ryan Reynolds, and two, time travel. So I was like pretty sure I would rock it. I even got a little teary eyed towards the end. It's like
I cried both times.
A little Field of Dreams type moment at the end with the dad and sons. And I'm just like, all right, y'all getting me. And obviously they're probably going to try to play it for sequels, and I'll be there for that as well.
Ooh, it's made that way.
Oh, you haven't caught it yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
It's definitely, if you have any daddy issues, you'll love it.
Okay.
And it's fun. It's not like, oh, wow, this is so well made, but it was like, it was well, for what it is, it's super well made and very endearing. I think you would love it too, Steve.
Is it better than Red Notice?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. 100%. But yeah. I also, full disclosure, didn't hate Red Notice. I was like, eh.
I didn't really hate Red Notice either.
Nice little day at the house.
You know, hate's, I mean, a strong word for Red Notice.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's more of a, why am I still watching this feeling?
I mean, Dwayne The Rock Johnson has not lost his charm from, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, all those movies are kind of doo-doo, but I'm also like, yay. I just get to smell what he's cooking again.
Yeah, I mean, it's The Rock being The Rock and Ryan Reynolds being Ryan Reynolds. And that's, I mean, you got to know what you're going to get.
The only thing you got to get over is Gal Gadot, who has lost her charm for, isn't she in Red Nose?
She is. Yeah.
I'm not charmed by her anymore, but
I heard that she's pretty wonderful in Death on the Nile.
I've heard that movie is hot garbage.
I keep wanting to watch it, and then he just keeps like shitting on it every time. And
I have not heard a single person not say that is time of my life. I will never get back. And as a Poirot fan, I am furious. And Kenneth Branagh needs to be set free. And there will never be another one of these movies. And
interesting. I just listened to another podcast where they're like, you know what? It got a lot of hate, but it's actually pretty fucking good.
Well, there you go. Send that podcast over to Sean. He needs a little bit of a talking to.
I just need like
push him over that edge.
A little bit of a push, and I'm in. I'm on. I'm like play. Other than that, I've also watched. I rewatched the original Nightmare on Elm Street the other day, just because I hadn't seen that since I was like a kid, and I'm like, is this any good?
It is.
It really is. It's pretty good.
I rewatched a few months ago, and like I got like nostalgia nightmares. It was wild.
Yeah, it was just like, okay, reinforce my love for old Krueger there.
Plus, you got to see baby Johnny Depp.
Yeah, and who doesn't love that?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
young, so handsome.
Amber Heard. But other than that, everybody.
Yeah, who was also in Pineapple Express.
Warner Brothers.
Yeah, found that out.
What?
The girlfriend in Pineapple Express is Amber Heard. We're going to sound stupid right now, but.
Gonna have to go back.
Yeah. We were talking about Amber Heard, and I was like, yeah, she's in Pineapple Express. And he's like, no, she wasn't, you stupid fuck. And I'm like.
I didn't say that.
I'm like, yeah, she's like the couscous girl.
Poots a nice thing, even twice.
And then also, funny, and listeners out here, I'll tell you, this is not a good Tinder date movie because I watched it with a Tinder girl, and I had no idea what it was about. But I watched Fresh.
Okay.
It wasn't the best. I mean, a great,
not a good first date movie.
Yeah, I loved the movie, but it was just so awkward.
Oh my god, that's so fucking funny.
Yeah, I'm all like, have you heard of this? You know what it's about? My buddy said it's good. She's like, yeah, let's watch it. And I'm like, just halfway through, I'm like, oh well, we're gonna finish this.
Are you pausing it halfway through? Like, I'm not gonna kill you. I swear.
It's like, I'm not getting hungry. Don't worry.
God damn, that's funny.
And then I think the only other thing I've been watching is I'm like halfway through Inventing Anna, and I'm like slowly getting through it.
Meaning you don't love it.
Don't,
but you're
love
not,
it.
You don't hate it.
But yeah, I'm just like, oh, I guess I'll go back to it. It's like intriguing and I want to find out what happens, but I'm not like down to binge it. So just saying.
Did any of you guys watch Inventing Anna?
No.
Netflix? Mm-mm. Anna Delvey?
Mm-mm.
I've read a bunch of articles about her, and I'd be really interested in like a documentary.
Yeah, you're really into that whole like corporate, you know, corporate degenerates,
yeah,
history. I didn't know this about you, Andy.
Yes, yeah, I feel like a documentary would be better, but this, it's like the dramatic retelling of it, mm-hmm, is like, yeah.
I've been watching The Dropout on Hulu, so it's kind of similar. It's like, this just happened and you already made a show about it. Wow. Okay. So yeah.
And then of course Moon Knight for me.
Did you watch episode two?
I did.
Andy and Steve have not, so we can't say anything.
No spoilers, but I just love it because I love the MCU and I love Fight Club, and it's like, boom, those two things put together.
I'm really digging it. I think I'm going to have some hot takes when I do my ranking of all the MCU shows after this, and Hawkeye's number one. I think that'll piss a lot of people off, but
Hawkeye's dope.
See, I don't think I'm alone in that, but I feel alone in that. But I really like Moon Knight. Episode two, I was like, because I don't know anything about the character of Moon Knight. I know nothing. So now they're kind of really getting in full swing with the hero part of Moon Knight in episode two. And I'm like, I really like this. This is neat. El Nito. And fun fact, I don't know if it's true. I assume it's true. I didn't confirm, but I saw a video where the director was a relative unknown Egyptian gentleman who wrote like a 200-page treatment of what he would do with Moon Knight when he heard Disney was developing it and sent it to them, and they were really impressed.
And they read it.
And he got the job.
Wow.
That's the legend, at least. He got the job. Because, you know, it's a huge project with a huge company, and his IMDb page is pretty sparse. One short film or something like that. So there's just like, wow, weird. But that's what happened. So
that's amazing.
Fun factoid. Steve, what have you been streaming?
Well, I haven't been streaming a lot. It's been a busy week, and usually my day to catch. We're filming or recording this on, this is Thursday.
We're 3 days early.
So we're 3 days early, and I usually take advantage of my Friday nights and my Saturday afternoons to like catch up on stuff before we start recording, because I'm usually pretty busy. So I haven't had a lot of time to watch some stuff. I do want to kind of touch on a couple things. I did try some more Halo on Paramount Plus, and man, it just absolutely just shocks me how you can make a TV show about the video game Halo so goddamn boring. Like, I don't know if you kept up with it, Andy, at all, but like,
are we on episode three now? I have not watched that.
Oh, I haven't finished it because I got like 20 minutes. It's like, I was like 20 minutes into it. I'm like, what the fuck? I don't care.
I'm going to go do my laundry.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to go do something more fun, like the dishes. but the one thing I do want to talk about that's really kind of sunk all of my free time, because I found this concept fascinating. It's really well done, but it's not a movie. It's not a TV show. It's something you can watch on YouTube. Are you guys aware of Polygon, the website? It's a video game website.
Absolutely. Yeah.
There's a guy on there named Brian David Gilbert, and he has a YouTube
BDG.
He's got a series on Polygon called Unraveled, and what he does is they're all video game based, but like, it's not like your typical like top 10 favorite characters in Zelda, you know. It's not those type of like boilerplate type of things. I mean, this guy graduated with a degree in creative writing, so all of his stuff is incredibly creative and unique and outside the box. So I'm just gonna read a couple of the titles of the videos you can watch that he's created. Which Dark Souls boss would be the best boss? Where he ranks all the Dark Soul enemies as like, which would be the best boss in a corporate realm? And he has like one of those big felt walls where he has like pieces of paper that he can just like slap on there. And like, he just, the way he does it is so well done and interesting. And he's really funny. My favorite one that he did was Waluigi Unraveled, where,
oh, you sent that. I didn't get a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, it's so goddamn funny, where he literally is like, there's never been a game created about Waluigi. So we're going to figure out just who is he? And he literally breaks down every single, you know how like old Nintendo games would come with like a game book
that
you could read. So he like breaks down all those. He would like any little morsel of information
for the lore of Waluigi.
That Nintendo has written about Waluigi. He compiles it into a list. He's like, we know he's very hardworking. He's mischievous. He has a crooked nose. He's got a mustache. Luigi is not afraid of him for some reason, which is weird because Luigi is afraid of everything.
We know this from Luigi's Mansion.
Yes, exactly. And I'm not going to spoil it. The ending, the last 5 minutes or so of that particular video, the Waluigi video, is so fucking funny, and it like speaks to how well written his stuff is, because it, you know, it's like pulling back from all these threads that he's kind of pulled in the beginning, and it's got a little bit of a twist ending, and it's really self-referential and funny, and I can't highly recommend it. So that is Unraveled on the Polygon channel of YouTube. Go check it out.
And that's, Sean's probably going to check that out. He's a big YouTube guy.
Was that the sponsor bit?
No, the check hasn't cleared yet.
I've only watched one thing that I want to harp on. And after this,
Let me get the harp real quick.
Yeah, get the harp. We'll rush to the theater. I know Steve's talked about it before. Andy's talked about it a little bit.
Yes.
Nice.
It's the streaming things harp. We actually need to make a segment where we harp on things and we just play the harp.
Just play the harp.
I mean, you did that. You literally just did that. But I just mean we could do it again sometime.
Yeah.
I watched the entirety of season one of a little show on HBO Max called Our Flag Means Death. And I have to say that that was a rapturous experience. I adore that show. I think it's one of the funniest things that I've seen in a long time. Huge fan of What We Do in the Shadows. Actually haven't watched the show much except for the pilot with Andy. How much I love so that movie is ridiculous. So I wanted to admit that. But a huge fan of the movie. Love Taika Waititi. This show is like, it's the hilarity of What We Do in the Shadows mixed with the emotional gravitas of Jojo Rabbit, even though I think it's worth being said that David Jenkins created this show and not Taika Waititi. So I think everybody kind of just, because of the vibe of the show is so Taika, it's like, oh, Taika's done it again. And like David Jenkins is just like, God damn it. But this show is wonderful and important. I didn't mean to put a question mark on that. I just kind of wanted to throw that in because it might not be known to people who haven't seen it yet. But I mean, every now and then you come across a movie or a show where it's like, this is really entertaining, but also like needs to exist, needs to be seen by more people. Mm-hmm. And this show is wildly funny, but it's funny because they wrap up all of this really weighty emotional theme inside absurdity. Mm-hmm. So it's just like this ridiculous set piece and, you know, like this gentleman pirate swinging on a flimsy ladder and hey, can you hold the bottom so I can get down there? You know, but then
come on guys, we're going to be pirates.
All of a sudden I'm crying. You know what I mean? LGBTQ pirates roaming the seas. I can't get enough of it. I think it's fucking amazing. Oh, yeah. I think that this show kind of pulls at the strings of masculinity in a way that's really important. You get to see Blackbeard crying because someone left him and he's lonely or he just lost in life, right? And it's not absurd. It's like, it's very much on purpose, right? And you mm-hmm. know this when you see it. So I have to say, this is one of those shows where, first off, if you're not a fan of What We Do in the Shadows or Taika's work or things like that, you're probably not going to ever buy into this. And I'm just being honest, right? Mm-hmm. But what kind of person are you really is what I'm really asking.
Yeah. If you're listening to this show,
go think about it. Right. Exactly. If you're listening to this show, you'll probably love it, but you have to really stick it out through the first four episodes. Toward the end of episode three is where things really kick off. Like that's where the dynamic of a Steed and Edward Teach, AKA Blackbeard, kind of takes over the show and it becomes something entirely different. But this is one of those rare shows, I think, and I think Steve would agree, where every episode is successively better, which isn't always the case. Like a lot of times there's episode five and episode eight were just crushed, you know, but every single episode is almost better than the one that came before. That was my experience binging it, at least over the last 4 or 5 days.
So I fucked up only watching the first episode.
I don't know if you were here on the episode where I said this. I think this was an episode that Madison was on, but there was a friend of mine at work. His name's Kyle.
You guys kind of argued about Our Flag Means Death through the show.
Yeah. I was listening to the episode where you watched it, not liking it that much on the airplane. I'm like, this fucking idiot, Andy. How could he? But no, a buddy of mine, he was like, hey, I watched the first episode of Our Flag Means Death. It's all right. I was kind of hoping it would be more about Steed Bonnet hanging out with Blackbeard. Because he knew Taika Waititi was Blackbeard. Like, dude, motherfucker, get through episode three. You're almost there. Just do it. And then it's through.
Well, that's like the case with like a lot of shows nowadays because shows are made more like really long movies now because they're binge model and stuff. So basically the first act is usually episodes 1 through 3.
Right.
And you're only getting to the meat after 3 or 4 episodes. So it makes sense.
Yep. Which is tough. And admittedly, because sometimes with shows like on Netflix, that means 3 to 4 hours, you know, to get to plot point one. But this show is only 30 minute episodes for the most part. So mm-hmm. there's no excuse, Andrew, no excuse whatsoever.
So I mean, I get it. Like, it's hard to be like, I promise you're maybe going to like this eventually. You know what I mean? But like, that.
But I loved episode one.
It's like my sex life.
From what the show becomes to what it starts off as is so fucking different. And I guarantee you, you like could never think of where it starts, where it ends up. Because it just goes in places that I personally, like every episode I watch it, like, what? It's going this way? I would never have guessed this. This is incredible.
Yeah.
I have a weird admission. I watched that first episode and then I spent a really long time looking up the actual guy that it was based on and watching YouTube videos about him and stuff.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So
it was really somewhat your story. I had a good time with the story. It was just tangential to the actual show.
Are you becoming one of those documentary guys?
That's what I did with Inventing Anna. I was like, all right, well, that was interesting first episode, Google. And then I was just like reading about her for the rest of the night instead of watching the show.
It's fascinating stuff.
I try not to do that, even though that's kind of a cool byproduct of shows based on real people and events. But I try not to do that because
yeah, you didn't want Hamilton spoiled for you.
No, exactly. Yeah.
What happens to Hamilton at the end?
Guys, you're never going to believe this. It's really sad.
He only ends up on the $10 bill.
But also not even like real fake things too. Like when I was watching Arcane, which by the way, I'll say again.
Great show.
It's so phenomenal.
I was going to bring that up when you said the episode 3 thing. I'm like, yes, your word on it now because I almost gave up on Arcane, but the episode 3.
Same exact way.
I told him it was one of the best shows ever made. And he texted me at the end of episode 2 and was like, it's okay. And I was like, dude, just fucking power through one more episode. I swear to God.
Yeah.
When it texted me at the end of episode 3 and was like, oh my God. And I was like, yes. And Our Flag Means Death is that way, but more subtly. Like, it's not like this giant turn, but over time, and the time, again, there's 10 episodes. This is probably 5 hours of show where you could watch it in one day easily. I think it took me 3 days. But it's like over time, I started to realize how important what I was witnessing was and how seen I felt. And especially the finale, all, you know, when he, things happen, I'll talk to you later. I'm really excited to talk about it with somebody. Things happen. The reason I'm harping on so much about this show is it has not been announced that there will be, it's greenlit for a season 2 yet.
It
ends in a way that it very much needs a season 2. I'm sure HBO Max is pretty good about, you know, that kind of, I mean, we got like 4 seasons of Doom Patrol. So I think we're golden, but I just want, the only way to get HBO to listen is to put eyeballs on it. So put your balls on it, you know, please.
I don't want to shit talk Doom Patrol too much. I know a guy who works on that show.
I knew a guy. People love it. I watched 4 or 5 episodes, was not a fan, but it was the only thing I could think of.
You just got to get through episode 5.
Yeah.
That's all you need, man.
Just got to get through season 2. That happens. Parks and Rec, season 1's not that great.
Yeah.
And it's one of the best shows of all time.
That's what my friend said about Ozark. I was like, I'm not really digging Ozark too much. He's like, oh, you just got to get to the second season. I'm like, man, if I got to get through a whole ass season to start like liking this show, I'm not.
Yeah, that's not fair to ask of somebody.
I've never actually seen the first season of Parks and Rec because everyone said it's bad. So I
watched the first couple episodes and my wife convinced me to start at episode 1 of season 2. And I was like, that's not in me typically to do, but she's like, I promise. And I did. Fast forward, you know, I'm in season 4, like, you know, like just, but laughing too.
You know, that's how you laugh.
Yeah. There's moments in Parks and Rec that are very, very emotional for me.
Yeah.
Gotta say.
It's got a little microcosm of the emotional display range that you have.
Yeah, there you go. Shut up, dogs.
They're just wanting the patents.
For the entirety of the show, Andy was petting Steve's wiener dog like a villain from a like Bond
Dr.
movie.
Evil, yeah. Some
if you ever hear her in the background, it's because she's harassing Andy to pick her up because for some reason, Andy is her favorite person.
And everyone else is her least favorite.
Yeah, even me. She hates everyone in this room except Andy for whatever reason.
So that's Our Flag Means Death on HBO Max. Please go watch it. We got to get going. We got to get our popcorn and our Icy's and our Reese's Pieces because we're heading in to see Everything Everywhere all at once. We'll be back on the mics in your time in your universe momentarily to give you our review.
Mrs. Wang.
Mrs. Wang, are you with us?
I am paying attention. Now, you may only see a pile of receipts, but I see a story. I can see where this story is going. It does not look good.
And we're back from the other universe. For you, it was mere moments. For us, hours. That's how the multiverse works.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Truly a lifetime, honestly.
We'll let you know if it lived up to the hype.
Next week on Stream.
Follow for part two. Sean, you are our guest, our honored guest. Share your overall thoughts, just in general, no spoilers. How did you feel about Everything Everywhere all at once?
Well, I felt that it lived up to the hype. I thought it was amazing. I mean, I laughed my ass off through most of the movie, but somehow at the end, I was still like pretty much crying. And so it was like hitting all the beats. And I just thought that the whole multiverse aspect of it was done like in a way I didn't quite expect from it, but still like just amazing. And I'm still trying to unpack like what it all meant like to me, and, you know, trying to see what they were saying with it. But I thought it was great.
Awesome. Mr. Andy.
This is spoiler free part, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You usually go first. Now you're going second.
I can go second. Oh, throw me off the game.
Dude, I cannot get over how fucking good that movie was. Like, holy shit. I got chills like almost like half of the movie. Just like, you know, like a body racking chill where it's like, oh my God. That happened at least like 6 or 7 times. And I cried like probably 3 or 4 times, most towards the end, like second half. I'm not going to lie. The first like 10 minutes, I was kind of like, oh no, this is chaotic and weird. And I'm not sure if I like it. And then like it found its moment, maybe like 15 minutes in. And I was like, okay, I'm here for this. And like that feeling did not go away. I honestly, this has to be the best movie of the year. I know that it's early in the year, but holy shit. It's the best movie I've seen in a really, really long time. That was fantastic.
Mr. Steve.
You know.
Coming on with a hot take.
Every now and then. You know, we're just little specks of dust floating across this universe, right? And every now and then, a movie comes along that just fucking hits. It just lands. And this movie... You know, I was while we were watching it, and it was a very specific point in the movie. We'll get to it when we talk about spoilers. That I was just sitting there, gobsmacked. If you looked at me, I probably looked like just a deformed, hideous creature that was half smiling, half coming in his pants.
Popcorn falling out of your mouth.
Popcorn falling out of my mouth. That I was just like, this is why I love movies. And this is why movies are so amazing and important and special. And this movie reminded me of why I love movies, top to bottom and
soup to nuts.
And you know, at this point, the Daniels are either God or they can kill God. And I don't give a shit about what the difference is. It's that good. Chris, what is your thoughts about this movie?
I don't know that I have the words, and I'm certain that I'm going to need to be allowed to entertain spoilers to even getting close to adequately expressing how I feel. But I guess I can say that this is not going to be a balanced podcast. I think it's safe to say that all four of us love the movie. Every now and then, and it's like you said, it's years in between, you know, like I love movies, right? So I watch a few a week and I genuinely like most of them, to be honest. And some of them are amazing, you know, and it's pretty common for them to be amazing. But every now and then you get something like The Matrix in 1999, and you just watch it. And the first time, even you don't even fully comprehend what you're seeing, but you know this is something you've never seen before. You know that things are different now. Not just for movies, but if I can be hyperbolic, life in general is just different now, you know? And you're watching it and you can see the artifice. You know a lot about movies and how they're made. You can kind of understand what they're doing. But at the same time, you have no fucking clue how they're doing what they're doing. And even more importantly, how they conceived of it. And that's how I felt watching this movie. You know, like watching The Matrix for the first time, you're like, oh, okay, we got computers now, you know?
I know, but Kung Fu.
But I really, at the same time, don't understand how they're doing this. Like, the helicopter just hit the building and it reverberated like pebble in water, you know what I mean? And watching, and that's harder and harder to do, I feel like. Not to take any credit from the Wachowskis, but watching this movie, I'm looking at when we can talk about it a lot in spoiler, I'm just flabbergasted that they would even take this on. You know, like mm-hmm. that any studio would review this script and be like, go, you know?
Yeah. Because this is such a bold and unique and weird and interesting, but heartwarming and lovable, and all at the same time. And it's a very unique perspective. Fortunately, we're in this age where we're getting a lot more movies that are based off people that aren't, you know, straight white dudes mm-hmm. being straight white dudes and doing straight white dude things. No, like this is, I'm so happy we live in a time that we can have stories like this that are really weird, but also grounded in a very real family, you know, that isn't necessarily my background, but I still can connect with it so much. And I love that about this movie.
Absolutely. There was this movie, even though I have nothing in common at face value with so many of these characters and this story in general, at the same time, it hit me right where I am in the universe. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. I think that's enough preamble, I guess. That's just dancing around the meat. I don't want to ruin this movie for anybody. We are about to spoil Everything Everywhere All at Once. Please do not listen yet if you have not seen it.
You are entering spoiler territory.
You're bullshit.
Okay. You're bullshit. That's kind of sums up what I took from this movie in the best way. Okay, somebody start us off now that we're free for spoilers.
That has to be one of the funniest movies I've seen in a decade at least.
Right?
Like, I was like, not just like I was like belly laughing throughout the majority of the runtime. It's so fucking batshit and weird. Like, how many we got, like, little snippets of a bunch of universes, but we had a couple that were just recurring mm-hmm. and they were the goofiest fucking shit. Like,
we had a universe where everyone had hot dog fingers. We had a universe where there was raccoon cooey.
Ejaculated ketchup and mustard.
Yeah, seemingly.
I think that was their version of coitus in that universe.
They play the piano with their toes instead of their fingers.
Obvi. You can't use anything with those hot dog fingers.
Fucking Jamie Lee Curtis doing her floppy hot dog finger, like, seduction dance. This is so fucking weird. I'm like crying and laughing while it's happening.
That's what's so remarkable about what they've done here is that you're... There was tears dropping down my face watching these hot dog fingers flop around.
Yeah. Yeah. I love how they just use that to, like, express how, like, humans can adapt and overcome anything. Cause she's all like,
yeah, there's this absurd universe where we have hot dog fingers and, well, we just got really good with our feet. Like,
yeah.
So. And I love the flashback to when hot dog finger people became hot dog. Yo. Where it was straight up that scene.
Steve was losing it.
Straight up that scene from like 2001 A Space Odyssey when they discover the bone, but it's like they discover they have hot dog fingers and they're just like wiggling their fingers up in the air, but they're apes and it's the funniest fucking thing ever.
And you saw the final normal handed ape die.
Yeah.
How much weed was smoked at the pre-development stage of this?
All of it? Yeah.
All the weed? All the weed in the multiverse.
So hear me out. It's Ratatouille, but with a raccoon.
I could not believe...
Raccoonie was fucking incredible.
I could not believe what I thought in the moment was just this really clever, really funny, one-off Ratatouille joke would spawn into its own, whole own multiverse of a raccoon hiding in a chef's hat. And then that is escalated by the main character jumping on the chef and piloting him by pulling his hair.
I was momentarily taken out of this film, just desperately craving to be sitting next to Patton Oswalt at his first viewing of this film, and just the sheer glee that man probably experienced. Damn it. I was sitting there like, God, to be there.
Oh my God. Why didn't someone film that in the theater?
That's all I want. Nicole Kidman, just Patton Oswalt watching this movie.
Instead of Charlie Cox's wife filming him at the Spider-Man showing, why wasn't she weeping next to Patton Oswalt?
I don't know if a lot of people know this about Patton. He's a aficionado of cinema. I mean, the guy's an encyclopedia of movies. Yeah. And it's really, I'm really impressed. I read his book, Movie Freak, and he's been watching two movies a day at the theater since he was a little kid. Fucking impressive. But yeah, this movie, I didn't laugh as much as you guys.
Really?
Oh, man.
And it's not because it wasn't funny. It was because really early on in the movie. So like Andy knows me. I mean, you all know me well, but Andy's known me since I was a real little boy. And like, I am psychotically stressed about the roads I have not taken. Right. And paralyzed by anxiety at any new fork, trying to compute where I'll be if I do this or that. And to the point where I actually end up doing nothing. Right. I've stayed at jobs for 6 years that I wanted to quit on the second day because I can't figure out the permutations of where the choice will lead me. And so I just end up stuck. And like 20 minutes into this movie, I realized that a heavy theme was that, right? And that hit me so hard that I was just too awestruck that it was just like right in my face. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when she's sitting in a laundromat and she's doing the fucking and I just got this like humongous tax bill that's going to be taking me 6 years to pay yesterday. And you know what I mean? And I did the laundry today. And like I cannot tell you. I was like, fuck.
Never felt more seen by a movie.
Like, exactly. And then he looks at her and he's like, you're the worst, Evelyn. You know what I mean? Like, you're not good at anything. Yeah. And I'm just like, because you never like stuck with anything. You know what I mean? And that's me, you know, but I think that's all of us in one way or another, but like, that's how I feel uniquely me. And cause it feels like everyone around me is really good at stuff and knows who they are. Cause that's what we all put on that act. And so we all feel so alone in that feeling. And so it was so beautiful to see this on the screen, you know? But then ultimately that's why she's so special and so good, right? Is because of that. So it's not like he just leaves it or the filmmakers just leave it there. Like, hey,
even though the
shit.
You know? Even though they do kind of end the movie kind of like that at one point.
Yeah.
Like halfway through the movie, the credits start rolling.
That was the people next to me. Yes. The people next to me actually bought the false ending.
Really?
Oh, they started like sitting up?
And there was like a sharp intake of breath and then like a bunch of curse words mumbled by the husband.
Like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah, like, oh,
I came
wow.
out here on a Thursday.
Oh, fucking wow, man.
I gotta fucking work tomorrow.
The movie's long, so it's long enough to believe for a second, you know? But anyway, Sean, what did you think about the spoily spoilers?
Well, just to touch back on what you were saying about like all the possibilities and stuff, but I mean, the movie kind of like doubles back and kind of ends and proves that despite all the endless possibilities and outcomes and things you could have done, that the one that you're doing is actually the one that you need to be at. Mm-hmm. What's the one for you? So that kind of was like reassuring, and I like that because I deal with that as well. Like the, oh man, what if I would have crossed and walked on the other side of the street? Like little things like that every day. I'm like, what if I turn down this way and go this way? And what's the change? The like butterfly effect or whatever. So, but I thought it was a heavy movie, and I definitely did not expect to laugh as much as I did. Mm-hmm. It was like the dude like just comes in slow mo diving for the butt plug, and I'm just like busting out laughing.
That's such an epic fight scene for dominance over a butt plug. Like, who owns this butt plug?
Let's be clear though, that is not a butt plug.
No, it's not.
That is a massive piece of.
It's an award.
It's an IRS award, so it's so fucking fitting.
It's huge. The other guy's got a bigger one jammed up to get his. I don't know why they both had the same. How fucking crazy unique is that? That is how you can branch off, is do something so absurd in the moment that's the quickest way to achieve another version of yourself. That's such a clever idea.
It's so genius.
And they've got these early 2000s Bluetooths to fucking to achieve that. And like at the end, the grandfather has like this 1988 computer mech warrior suit.
Yeah, he's made his own version of the Ripley mech suit from Aliens, but from his wheelchair.
But from like really old, like there's floppy disks inserts for sure.
Yeah.
Their other movie, Swiss Army Man, was big on like recycling things for art. So I loved that we got some of that aspect in it too, because like a huge part of why I love Swiss Army Man so much is just like the design, the dumb little things where it's like, I made my own little bus on the in the woods out of sticks and garbage, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was really cool to see that come back. But yeah, the whole idea of the most statistically unlikely thing that you would do at a given point is the thing that makes you branch off. At one point, she's like pushed up against a wall and stuck, and a fly flies over and lands on her arm, and she snorts it. I'm just like, what the fuck?
She gets strong pinky version of herself. That whole concept is just a really, in an age where the multiverse is all the rage and ideas, like anyone, like you were saying earlier, the letterbox guys. I mean, it's funny that the Russo brothers produced this because
that is funny.
They stole the best directors from the MCU as well. But it's like no one will touch this approach to it.
Yeah.
No matter how many different multiverse things we get. And what I was saying earlier about like when you're watching a film and you don't know, like you kind of know how it's done, but you don't know how they did it. I want to talk to you guys about that a lot because I was taken out of the film at various stages, just like, how the fuck? And then like trying to compute the logistics, because they're oscillating between like, I don't know, 15 or 20 different realities at lightning speed, right? Mm-hmm. So almost to the fact where like, if you're epileptic, be careful, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that means that they had all of these set pieces with all these minute details. I mean, they had to be 40 different set pieces with the main characters in different costumes and stuff. And they had to, so if you're shooting, obviously you do them all at once while they're dressed that way, but like you have to have storyboarded the fuck out of it and know that, okay, then we need this kind of movement. Cause we're, you know what I mean? Like I was just sitting there like, what the fuck?
Yeah. There's literally a fight scene where every punch that lands that like blips them to a completely different location and stuff like, and this movie is just an example of what amazing production, when amazing production design, directing, writing, and editing comes together at its zenith.
Yes. Yes. It's
every piece of the machine that is this movie is functioning optimally. And it's incredible to watch. Cause like, I was like you, like there's a couple times where I was taken out of the movie. Just like, this like, is just amazing how they fucking
are. Do you remember that reality where they're both in prison in like classic striped suits?
Yeah.
So they go there when the daughter and the mother first meet as they are evil and protagonists. And then they meet again in that prison and they're like an hour and a half later toward the end of the third act. And it's like, That, yeah, of course they filmed them both at the same time is the way they did that. But what I'm saying is those characters are in just light years apart, different emotional places in the story. Mm-hmm. And so that's incredible to me. Do you know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah.
Punch, 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 back up. And then it's like, okay, now you're the aggressor. You've learned the secret of the universe. You're trying to get your daughter. Like as an actor, as a director, it's like, what?
Yeah. The confidence of the direction of this is fucking wild. Yeah. And that's what stands out to me, like probably above everything else. Because like you said, you don't just storyboard the shit out of it. And you do, because you have, there's so many like match cuts and like little editing tricks that they do to make things fit and stuff. But like you have to know everything about this movie front to back to get something like this, to the whole amalgamation of what we got, the finished product, for that to happen. They had to know, like, this is exactly when this happens. This is exactly why this happens. This is the emotional beat that we're trying to get you to portray. This is how you need to do that. And this is where we're going to go from here and why.
Yeah.
And like, that's for every cut, you know, and there's times where it's like, it just fucking mind blowing. I actually looked over at Steve one point. It was just because the edit was so fucking incredible. There were a couple of times where it focus on Michelle Yao. Is it pronounced Yao?
I think it's Yo, but I honestly don't know.
It's focused on her face. She's center frame. And then like, it starts cutting through like different variations of her and all these.
Yeah.
Different
it's like
universes.
200 different shots of her face in different backgrounds, makeups, settings, and everything. And like these shots are only lasting like what, a frame each?
Yeah. And it is just flat, and like once in a while one's like animated or something, and then it'll give like an extra frame or two to make one stand out where it's like, oh, she's a lizard face here, and you see that for a slightly bit longer to make it,
oh,
like
she's an anime character here. Yeah,
exactly. But like I looked over to Steve at one point because they did that a couple of times, but there's one time where they're like, okay, we're going to blow our load on it this time. And they did it for like a solid 30 seconds or something. It felt like it.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, yeah, fuck, dude. The edit. That took that dude a month. Like, that was insane.
And when she gets drawn to for the first time back into into the multiverse, into a different universe, and she's in that rolling chair, the office chair in the IRS, and she slides right and then down the line of cubicles. Was that like a CGI? I can't even talk. A CGI dolly zoom? Like, I just, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, this looks fucking incredible. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that was digital blur. Actually, I have no idea. I
probably like pushed her down a green screen hallway and like added all this shit around her and a bunch of visual effects and stuff.
Yeah, there you go.
Again, a perfect marriage of all these departments working cohesively.
Yeah, exactly.
Together.
And I think Andy hit the nail on the head. This is just not to, you know, suck the Daniels too hard, right? But this really just seems like two visionaries who knew exactly what they wanted and were able to communicate that to every other vital part, which is rare. It's so rare. Like I said, David Chen said it best. He's the one that did all that when that was his original tweet, which now I understand. Like, this only happens a couple times a decade, right? Like, this is a Mad Max Fury Road. This is the Matrix. You just, everybody who's an expert looks at this and goes, what the fuck? Yeah. You know, which is why we've seen directors like Rian Johnson and other titans like that we admire just tweeting like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, it's absolutely incredible. And I do want to kind of point out just the three main leads, Michelle Yao, Stephanie Hsu, Kehu Kwan. They are all fucking nailing this movie. Yes.
That was the Goonies guy that was her husband?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I'm just now realizing by looking at the IMDb page that his name isn't Raymond. It's Waymond.
Yeah, it was Wayman the whole time.
Wayman.
I thought it was Raymond, but it's Waymond. But yeah,
Alpha Waymond.
Especially he in particular, I was kind of impressed by, because he would go from, because the story kind of starts off with another universe version of him.
Alpha Waymond
kind of hacking into this universe as Waymond. And like, so he would go from affable, cute, adorable, hello, I'm just your lovable husband who's kind of a goof. And then he'd be like, we have to protect you. He would just like on a dime switch to being ultra serious.
And Clark Kent and take his glasses off.
I love that mechanic because it's kind of corny, but it's not. It makes perfect sense that like, you know, we need a visual cue to the audience. We have to have one. Like, we can't get around this. But it also makes sense that this other version of him has 20/20 vision. Mm-hmm. And so the, you know, the glasses bother him when he gets in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Like he's the alpha.
I bought it immediately and was like, thank you for the clue so I can keep up. But also, you know, it's not ruining anything.
Yeah.
Also, and then to kind of keep on his character for a minute, Chris, you mentioned that you felt seen about the whole questioning, you know, life choices and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a point in the movie where it kind of focuses on his character and it kind of brings it full circle where it's like kindness is his weapon. And he has kind of a, like, there's like a monologue that's happening between like five different versions of him at once.
Yeah, the classic black and white movie star version of him was given the big emotional linchpin of that speech.
Yeah.
You think I'm an idiot, but I'm, you know, this is my weapon. This is,
yeah,
this
he's
is
like, how I would you think adapt. I'm an idiot. You think I'm too nice. You think I'm naive, but this is my weapon. This is how I'm able to.
I've been on the earth as many years as you.
Right? Yeah. I mean, this is how I'm able to deal with the shit that all of us go through.
Yeah.
And as a fellow person who's recently kind of gone through the whole divorce and had a hard time with someone that I lived with that wasn't looking at me like that anymore and always trying to be the, I'm here to help you. I'll do whatever I can to make you feel better. Yeah. Like I was just like, fucking yes. Thank you. Like I don't have to be a big, strong alpha man to like know what fighting feels like. You know what I mean? And like this is the first movie in a long time that I feel like that's been so directly addressed, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I love it so much, and it's so interesting that a movie like this, where the drama isn't solved by just punching everything. It's like no, like she has to figure out how to be quote unquote kind and give people what they want. Like she sprays the one guy with the perfume that reminds him of his wife in mm-hmm. one universe. She spanks the guy's into it. The submissive dude who's like he wants to be gagged and spanked.
I get it.
She reunites what is it? Raccoon Tooie? The Raccoon Tooie chef?
Raccoon Cooney.
Raccoon.
Raccoon. Yeah. She reunites Raccoon chef with Raccoon.
At one point like that. He's too tired and so he has to pull her hair so she can run the rest of the way and throw him. I love my favorite bit
when they came back to that universe, because they did it a couple of times where it's like, oh, it's a fucking joke. Oh my God, there he is, a thing. And she goes, rip the hat off. But when he's sitting there outside the restaurant, like weeping, the hibachi restaurant, he's like, he just taught me so much. He took that away from me.
I didn't even know how to boil an egg.
And he taught me how to spin it with a spatula.
I love it when she pulls the hat off him initially and you see this like raccoon puppet on his head, and then the raccoon it's like she knows too much.
No, that's when she walks in on him in the kitchen. Yeah, there's that.
She knows too much and like pilots him to pick up a knife and go after with a knife.
That was so awesome. She's seen too much.
And then like the scene I mentioned earlier about where I was just kind of gobsmacked and just like, this is the best movie ever, was when it cuts to the universe where everyone's just like, they're just rocks.
Dude, I know. And yeah, that's probably my favorite part of the movie.
Like, yes, that was so like quiet. Yeah. And I needed that after all the chaos in it. And they know that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, hey, you're stimulated.
It's just this 2-minute scene of just two rocks sitting on a ledge and they're talking to each other via like superimposed text that is very, it's like Times New Roman font. But it somehow manages to be
papyrus,
heartfelt and funny, but it's just literally just two rocks sitting there. Yeah. It's genius filmmaking.
It cuts back to it when they're chasing. She's chasing her daughter as a rock. Get away from me. And
she's got the cliff and she follows her over.
She's got the googly eyes.
When the rock turns and it reveals that it's wearing the googly eyes. Oh, killed me.
And that somehow that's such a heartwarming, impactful moment.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie does so well. And I don't think they even understand that about themselves, or they're just so humble about it. But the amount of empathy in this movie, and I don't even have the words to express it, but that's what I recognize as like wholly unique. Because in the beginning of the movie, you understand everyone's perspective in this film. Like you understand why the husband would feel the need to divorce her. Like he's not getting what he needs, right? You understand why the daughter's upset. You even understand the bigoted old man, because he's, you know, he's like 80 years old. He comes from where he comes from. And then you understand when she looks at her husband and says, you should see my life if I never went with you. It's incredible.
It's beautiful.
And that's so hurtful, but like, fuck yeah, you saw it. You get it. I understand that, right? I'm not mad at any of these people for being who they are. I understand the fucking IRS lady. I wasn't mad in the slightest. Like, and then we get more of her character later, but even in the moment, it's like, I understand. And like the Daniels understand, and they're making me understand because they're so good at this. And then by the end, it does that shift, and Waymond is seen as this paragon of a good way to live life, in fact, and not somebody who deserves to be like shat on, and everything shifts. And, anyway, I just love that like constant, oh, you think you understand, you know,
an incredible
perspective. What if they were, what is the word when you hit something and candy comes out?
Pinata.
Yeah. What if they were pinatas?
Yeah. And they're like swinging against each other. Yeah. I love that.
And their daughter, you hear the voice like, oh, great.
Guess we're just going to hang out. An incredible example of what you just said, Chris, about this empathy is there's that character. I think that she's probably just called Big Nose. She's the super like.
Isn't that the sister from Parks and Rec? Yeah.
The worst.
Nanny.
But money, please.
Money, please.
But she could very easily be this character that you just hate because she's bratty and seemingly bitchy.
I was really surprised to see her at the party, like lonely.
Well, even in the first scene where they introduce her, there's such restraint where like she's obviously on a phone call with someone with she's got her little Bluetooth headset in. And she's like, she yells at the person on the other end like, no, I have to give her the number. That's how the world works. Like he because you get the impression that the person on the other end's like, is she yelling at you?
Yeah.
But she like kind of defends Michelle Yeoh's character, even though like on the surface, she seems like she'd be the type of person like, yeah, this bitch doesn't have my clothes.
Yeah.
And I know that's such a small thing, but just that small little restraint.
She's not a mind reader. Right.
Yeah. Just that small little bit of information is like, oh, okay, this woman's not a total monster. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not, no one in this movie is a total.
Exactly.
Well, she did use her dog as a ball and chain. That's that was pretty so monstrous. Funny. Dude, I was fucking dying.
It was so good. Sorry, baby.
Hey, the dog seemed to have a great time.
And then when she snipped the dog and it went,
out as a rooster.
Why was like, a chicken, fucking, Andy?
Like ricochets off the cubicle.
I know, dude.
It's like, oh my God, they made it so visceral. There's so many great sound effects. You mentioned the chicken sound effect for the dog, but then also whenever she uses her pinky attack on people, it's the Super Smash Brothers super like elimination noise. That. So good.
The performances were incredible. I cannot imagine this movie without Michelle Yeoh, but I gotta say, the person I was the most impressed with was the woman who played her daughter, Joy.
Stephanie Sue?
Yes. That was...
So. Like, apparently it was designed for Jackie Chan to be the lead, which is, like, so weird to imagine because I couldn't see it playing out the same as with Michelle because it's just, like, seems like the way it should be.
Oh, for sure. Wait, you mean Jackie was supposed to be, like, the male lead?
Yeah, but they gender swapped it.
Oh, really? I was thinking...
He was going to be Evelyn.
Yeah. I was thinking Jackie Chan as Wayman, and I was like, I could totally see that.
No, yeah, same, but no, like intentional, like the first intentions were for him to be the lead.
Yeah.
And that just
he's such a different movie.
They so different, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
They should have cut to that universe for a split second. Where
right, like she wouldn't understand like, it.
She is Jackie Chan.
Yeah, they could have cut to one where she Kevlin. Wasn't a woman. Yeah, for sure.
Just throw his face in that like flashing montage. Right.
It might be in there. I guess that makes sense because there is that universe where she's like a movie star who's famous for being a stunt fighter like a Jackie Chan is, you know? That makes sense, but still, that would be such a very different
I think that
would
have been a mistake because of all the baggage we have and our bias of our own, like the vision we have of Jackie Chan would have totally recolored that movie.
Mm-hmm. That, and I love how this movie is centered around a mother and daughter sort of rectifying.
And so soon after turning red, it was just like the click, the last puzzle piece for me.
Very simple. There's a lot of similarities between this and turning red.
I gotta, like, the daughter's performance, you said her name was Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Like in the first 20 minutes, you know, she's playing this very straight, gay, but this very like forward, like role, like, you know, it just seems like I've seen it 1,000 times.
Daughter that's upset with mom.
Yeah. And then when she gets into this like godlike character I was like, holy shit, this person?
With her everything bagel. She put like,
oh, the bagel.
My hopes and fears and dreams and sesame seeds.
Every Craigslist post.
Everything.
Everything.
You know, like 2 weeks ago, I saw a TikTok where a guy made a whole skit about the man who invented the everything bagel. And it's just as insane as this movie is.
Yeah,
I saw that too. I was like, is that just a thing?
In the city with the early release.
Maybe.
And it inspired him. But
he's like, nothing matters. If people eat this fucking thing, then just nothing matters. It's actually kind of incredible how prescient that was that he made this right before this movie
came out. I want you to go in the back of the kitchen and grab everything and just dump it on this fucking bagel. No, sir, I won't do it. I won't do it.
Do you have any other thoughts, Sean? Anything bouncing around up there that we haven't mentioned that you really just want to get out there?
Well, we didn't mention the fanny pack.
That was incredible.
I knew it was on from the like that.
There's
like
a shot in the fanny pack scene when he first hits the first guy, and it's a close up of the I don't know, it's not Velcro, but like the rope, you know, the belt part of the fanny pack, like loosening in his hand and then going taut right before it cuts to the end of the fanny hitting the dude's nose. And the sound design there, like, I don't know if you guys remember the shot I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what
you're
talking about. Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen a lot of incredible fight choreography, but yeah, go ahead, Sean, fanny pack.
Oh, it's just, I mean, that's like the moment when I was like, okay, we're in for a ride. Like, this dude just beat up a room full of people with a fanny pack and then supercharged his fanny pack with like rocks from a fish tank.
From an aquarium rock.
After eating a stick of chapstick.
Yeah.
Which made, I love how they did that, but without telling us first. Like, we're just like,
right, like that being the little activation thing didn't even come up to like 25 minutes later.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's why I thought he just liked eating chapstick.
And then he's eating gum off the bottom of a desk. And at first I was trying to put it together and my brain's like, oh, your teeth clamp down hard when you jump. So you'll take whatever you can to help brace yourself way off. Way off.
I love the scene where it's later on in the movie, but like Michelle Yeoh's character and whoever she was fighting, like, lose the connection to their alternate multiverse. They just start slap fighting because they don't know what to do. They went from these kung fu masters. It's like, get away. Quit it. No, you quit.
Until he realizes he needs to shove that statue that's in his ass.
It's just this incredibly choreographed, let me stick this statue up my ass. And she's like, no.
just the tension of a guy desperately trying to slam his butt down. And she's trying to either push him or grab the butt plug award.
Then that guy triumphantly leaping with no pain. Pants and his legs splayed.
Just so open, just ready for
and
it.
And he's got the look of triumph.
He just turned around like, yes.
I love how they did the digital sensor around his balls, but you can still see something like dangling.
When I realized that was the statue, I lost it. Yeah. I was like, what is this? And that you have to watch Swiss Army Man because it's basically that, but even in some ways a little weirder because no one knew who they were. So he's just riding Daniel Radcliffe's corpse farting across the ocean. And we're like, what the fuck?
It's incredible.
It's such a unique movie. You're guaranteed to have never seen anything quite like it, but it's not the kind of weird that's like off-putting or strange. You know how you can watch like an A24 film and it's weird, but it's purposely off-putting and makes you uncomfortable.
Yes.
This movie I never felt uncomfortable watching it. I was just constantly intrigued and bewildered in a good way. Just like, what is going on? I need to know. Mm-hmm. And then it just starts hitting you with these like emotion, just like really human moments in such a bizarre package.
That's what I love, the imagery of all the googly eyes that goes along with this film, because it's like, it's all about perspective. Mm-hmm. And everyone feels seen. If you'll forgive me, when you watch it, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I love the imagery of all these eyes everywhere because there's so many different ways to look at things. And it's her husband that sticks those everywhere and she hates it initially. Right. So that's how I felt.
I love when you see him put him on the lantern. He's like, runs away with the lantern. That was endearing.
Yeah. She's like going off on him in the first scene about him. And then it's like super endearing because when she actually like uses his information to like unlock her metaphorical third eye, that's like the imagery with the googly eye. It's like, oh, that's a nice little touch there.
Yeah.
I see what y'all are doing.
Full circle.
the laundry's happy here.
Yeah.
I struggled a little bit at the beginning with the transitions back and forth between English and Chinese. Did you guys have an issue with that? I don't know if it's just in my brain, I'm like, I'm reading the subtitles and then suddenly they're not there anymore, but they're saying words and I didn't catch what those words were.
Not so much the transition betwixt English and Chinese, but it was, or Mandarin, or I don't know what that was. It was more that I, for the first time in a long time, I struggled to read the subtitles because I did not want to look away from the screen for a second, right?
Yeah, there was
the way that they were framing those shots. I was just like trying to figure it out. And then I was like, oh yeah, read.
There was one sequence that they cut to a couple of times where it was like, I think it was in her Hollywood starlet sequence or universe. She's standing in an alleyway with dude and it's like angled interestingly like a noir where like down at the end of this alley in the top right corner of the frame is where the street is, where the alley ends and the street begins. But that part was in slow-mo. And then everything around them wasn't. So it was like this blurry, weird, or I'm sorry, everything around them was slow-mo, but they weren't. And so it was like this weird, cool blur thing happening. But that was a subtitled sequence. So I'm like real quickly glancing down at, at the subtitles, like, what did they say? Okay, anyway, this is really pretty. What did they say?
This is going to warrant multiple rewatches.
I can't wait to do them.
I was going to look and see what I'm showing tomorrow.
Damn.
No,
I'm still not going to go see Sonic 2.
You got to make room for Morbius, Andy.
Yeah, we need Morbius.
Yeah, I don't know if the world can handle Morbius. I've got all the BS I can take. This movie was incredible. I hope that if you made it this far, that you've seen it already. So, hope you got what we got from it, because that was incredible.
The things you heard about this movie everywhere, mm-hmm. all at once.
Yeah. I didn't expect for those to be the chapters of the film. And the way that the first one was introduced, I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about?
She's so overwhelmed and she, you know what I mean? That's how I was yesterday, you know? And what are you thinking about exactly? And then
she everything.
Up and everything. And I was like, that is, put that in a box for me.
Right, and that's like 40 minutes into the movie or something, right? Like it's pretty fucking far.
The movie deserves to be this long because you need that. Like there's like at least four different films in this movie. And I don't mean like the costumes and the set pieces and the styles, but like, you know what I mean? Like the
potential content and emotional weight. Yeah.
I would have watched an entire 2-hour movie of the first 25 minutes and ditto the second and so on and so on.
Just the Rock
or
the two Rocks. I would watch them sit there and talk forever. Right.
For sure. At least a good 20, 30.
Yeah.
I don't know how long I could watch the pinatas, but.
Well, if you want to watch a whole movie.
I have watched.
You can watch Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, which comes out soon.
That is going to be incredible.
That did look endearing.
But the Shell gets going. That's the whole point. It's different than the Rock.
That's true.
He's got shoes on.
Like that was the Rock. The 2 minutes with the Rocks. People are going to think we're talking about Dwayne the Rock Johnson. Like I didn't see him in that.
There's two of them.
Is that the director's cut?
With the Stones, it's like a David Lowry film. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Casey Affleck coming in.
That was a great movie. I'm so happy that we watched it.
Yeah, I really was scared that it wasn't going to live up to what I needed it to be.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, I was scared too, because when I first saw the trailer and I was like, oh, multiverse and there's multiple Evelyns and then there's like martial arts. And I'm like, I hope this isn't just like a cheap like ripoff of Jet Li's The One.
I was going to say, I've seen Jet Li's The One.
Yeah, nobody's bitch. Nothing like it. Like, way different.
I am the immortal Iron Fist. That was your.
I am the immortal Iron Fist. That was
Danny voice. Yeah, it lived up to the hype. Awesome. Thank you. Daniel's our patron subscriber, so that's awesome.
It's true.
Speaking of which, we did get a new patron subscriber while we were watching the movie, so thank you, Shay.
Yes, Shay.
The best timeline.
By the way, patrons, don't forget to vote on the Nicolas Cage movie we'll be watching later this month. And if you would like to vote on that, you could become a patron of our show.
Yeah, $5 or more a month, and you can vote on these polls and listen to the episodes. Mm-hmm. Currently, only two of you have voted so far in the poll, so get on it.
Yeah, we got a 0 for Face Off, 1 for Ghost Rider.
Yes.
And 1 for National Treasure.
I'm back, baby.
My vote goes for Mandy.
Thanks, Sean.
We'll list that under other.
Tune in next week. What are we going to be talking about next week, guys? We got a couple films coming. Probably The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Is that next week?
Yeah, next week.
Okay. All right. Let's get our tickets.
That's April 15th. Thank you all so much for joining us. Thank you, Sean, for joining us. That's all the time we have. My name is Chris.
And I'm Andy.
And I'm Steve.
And I'm Sean.
And this was Streaming Things. Happy streaming.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.